Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to Upfront. I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
Man United had a huge chance to stake their claim for the WSL title this weekend. I am incredibly gutted, and they came unstuck as Chelsea showed everyone the difference between WSL hopefuls and WSL contenders. Elsewhere, West Ham and Brighton played out a 9-goal thriller. It was absolute carnage. Leicester have a new manager, and Jill Scott makes her jungle debut. Yes, Jill. Joining Rach and I this week is the star of Girls on the Ball. It's esteemed football journalist, and it says friend of the pod, Sophie Downey, but I feel like you two are more than friends. I mean, I don't want to spread rumours or anything, but I heard you guys are more than friends.
I think we might be married.
Yeah, it's Rachel's
last
wife.
I checked.
We actually got Rachel's wife on the pod. Welcome, Soph. Welcome to the pod for the first time, making your debut. Look at you two there together, looking all cute and couple-y. How's it going?
Thanks for having me. It's good. I'm excited.
I'm
looking coppery. We're very professional.
Of course. Yeah. Please. Professional at all times. That's how we roll here on Upfront. How is it sort of, you know, having to listen to Rachel at home and then also coming onto the pod and having to listen to her opinions here as well? It must be quite a lot.
It's a lot. She talks a lot. I'm joking. No.
No, that's factually accurate now.
Yeah.
That's true.
That is. You do talk a lot.
Yeah.
No, it's great. I'm used to it by now.
You have to say that. Yeah. You have to say that. I mean, is she kind of pinching you under the table a little bit? A little bit of sneaky kicks and things like that.
If you don't behave, we won't have you back. We'll take away your friend of the pod
you
title.
You won't be having dinner tonight. So, yeah.
So
only positive things. Welcome to the pod. Absolutely lovely to have you on. I feel like it's been a long time coming. So yeah, welcome to Upfront and all the weirdness that's going to unfold in the next 30 minutes to 45 minutes. First off, I mean, we've got to start with some big celebrity updates here. Jill Scott hitting the jungle. I mean, I don't know whether you guys have found the time in between watching all the football that's happened this week, although some of the games obviously were cancelled because of the bad weather. I mean, it just provided so much entertainment. I mean, Jill Scott, within two episodes now, has gone viral for falling off a hammock. There wasn't that much swearing, which is good. I mean, it's sort of a little bit more low-key from the kind of Euros, fuck off, you fucking prick, which...
Give her time. But
it is the early days. It is very early days. And then they had her on the middle of a ledge, 15 stories up, and then, like, launching herself off of a platform, which I thought was... nothing short of heroic. I mean, what else would you expect from a former lioness? And not only being on the edge of the platform, but also helping Charlene and shouting words of encouragement at the same time. I mean, leadership qualities 101, Jill Scott. Have you guys caught it?
I don't feel like I need to watch it, right? Because we don't normally watch it. But what's great about women's football is obviously our timeline is just going to be full of lovely little clips of Jill. So I don't actually need to watch it. I can just like go on any of my social media and it is filled with clips of the great Jill Scott. What I love about it is just means more people are going to see what we've had to enjoy for the last, you know, so many years. It's great. It's like, welcome. This is Jill. She's amazing. Enjoy.
This is actually who she is. This is everything you need to know about her. Yeah, Sophie, have you caught it?
No, I saw the falling out of the hammock one, and I saw the mashup between the falling out of the hammock with the fuck you, you fucking prick clip from the Euros, and they mashed it together like she was turning around to swear at the hammock.
That is
gold.
Yeah,
I mean, she's brilliant, isn't she? She's just the best.
But I also just feel so sorry for her. I mean, she's, you know, she's gone in there, obviously off the back of the Euros, a champion, a European champion, fallen from grace, stuck in the middle of a platform 15 floors up, eating kangaroo arse. I feel like it's not the way that you should be treating a national icon and hero. But she chose that life. She chose that life. So
she's going to smash it.
Yeah.
I can't wait for next week's update.
She's going to be queen of the jungle for sure. I mean, putting our state pole flag in the sand, that's it.
Yes.
She's going to
win. For once, we can join together with our flagpole in the stake sand.
Yeah. We're agreeing. Gosh, it must be nearly Christmas because that's a bloody miracle. I think it's probably time that we got onto some football, I reckon.
Shall we?
Since that's probably why people are listening. The big one. We've got a start. Man United. Chelsea. Chelsea walking away with the points. 3-1. What a game. I was expecting that this was going to be a little bit more finely balanced. And I think it was. I think the first half, I mean, the possession stats kind of say it all, very equal. I thought Man United did well playing out from the back. Chelsea starting with the sort of the high press. Soph, you caught the game. How did you find it?
I think that's right. I think it was much closer in that first half. I think they let it get away from them. I think it was 2 goals in like 2 minutes or something in that second half, and they just kind of let it get away from them. And there was the whole thing with Hannah Blundell being injured as well when the first goal went in. It was an interesting one. I still think there is a gap. I'm not entirely sure about Mark Skinner's tactics or substitutions. I didn't really understand why you brought Alessia Russo off, having just scored a goal, being your main goal scorer. That didn't really... compute with me. I think they're closer, but there's still a gap there. I think they're, it's showing that they've made progress.
Yeah, I thought, for me, I felt like the first half was a little bit cagey. Like, both sides were kind of testing each other out. They knew, despite, you know, their pre-match comments about it just being another game, it obviously wasn't just another game. Like, this was the one fixture everyone was really looking forward to this weekend. And for me, I felt like the first half was maybe just a little bit flat. I think a little bit cagey. Yes, Chelsea were pressing Man United, but I felt like their press was quite static. You know, they were kind of standing in the spaces, but not hugely pressuring the ball, if you know what I mean. But Man United, as you said, did really well kind of to play out of that. I think both sides had decent chances in the first half. One decent chance where the keeper had to pull off a top save. There was a great save by Berger, a real like reaction save quite early on from Nikita Paris, I think it was. A bit of a cagey first half and quite a physical game. But I think second half, the difference for me is Chelsea's decision making in those moments of like unexpected ball possession or when Man United make mistakes. And I think that's the kind of the showings of a champion, is that when you're not playing your best football. I don't think Chelsea have reached their best yet, but the fact that they can still go out and win big games like this, even if they're not playing their best football, that's where the difference is for me. You know, they can capitalize on mistakes so much more maybe than Man United did. Now, Man United's goal was from a Chelsea mistake, but that for me is Alessia Russo and Ella Toon really showing the ruthlessness that they've learned from the Lionesses for me. But I think that's maybe where the difference is that mentality of you find yourself suddenly in possession, you break down a play, you're kind of in an unexpected situation and you know what to do straight away to capitalise on that. And Chelsea did really well with that.
I think that's a really important point. Mark Skinner, I think, said pre-game about all of these experiences that his United team are banking, you know, as they progress and try and get this experience. And that's another one that Chelsea have had for so many years. You know, even when they might not be at full throttle or whatever, they find a way to win a game. United haven't quite had that yet. And if you think back to last year when they lost, I think it was 6-1 or something,
yeah.
6 to Chelsea, that shows progress from then to now, the fact that they were in that game for a good period of it. But I think it's still about building those blocks and learning those experiences as we go on, because they're still quite relatively young side in terms of their experience within the league. So yeah, I think that showed heaps.
Yeah. No, I've got to agree with that. I mean, you know, Farrah Williams said the difference between the sides was Chelsea's ability to think clinically and ruthlessly in the game's big moments. And, you know, I did feel that actually that was where United kind of fell short. I think tactically, they got it probably spot on in the first half. I think they were confident in possession. I think they continued to keep playing out from the back, even though it obviously was the riskier strategy. And I think that built confidence in themselves that they could do that. They were finding ways out and being quite creative. Again, using Earps as well, I thought she did really well in the first half as well. And you know, you could see how much the possession kind of changed in the second half. I think it went down to about 33% to Man United. And you know, you've got to say that, I mean, Mark Skinner kind of, you know, he was very honest. He said, you know, we felt we were outdone by lapses in concentration, and that's what it kind of came down to. And I think, you know, even from the commentary when I was, you know, listening on the game, you could see how the game kind of felt like in the last 20 to 30 minutes, it was coming down to who was going to make less mistakes, because even Chelsea were making mistakes. And that wasn't something that I was expecting to happen. I thought Man United would have lapses in concentration, but Chelsea also showed that they were vulnerable to that as well.
Yeah, there were a couple of times where Man United got in behind Chelsea and there were some hairy moments in the defence between, you know, Buchanan and Bright, and that's what I'm talking about in terms of those instances where you capitalize on those errors, and they just weren't quite sharp enough in those moments to do that. And I think that was literally the difference, because there were opportunities for Man United to capitalize. And like you say, it's you know, rinse and repeat, get that in your head so you know what to do next time. It shows that Chelsea can be vulnerable. So I think there are positives for me from the Man United performance. I think you're right in terms of tactics in the second half maybe weren't quite there, but just another example of what great champions Chelsea are for me.
I think it's learning for Mark Skinner too as well. You know, he made that change for Alessi Russo, which I disagree with, but also when Hannah Blundell had to come off, he made Leah Galton the left back, I think, which, you know, nullified her threat going forward. She can do that position, but it's not her natural position, and we all know her goal scoring ability. So it was just a bit questionable about what he did in that area, I think, and he'll learn from it, I'm sure.
Mark Skinner, start listening to Up Front, because we've got some tactical analysis and suggestions for you.
Oh no, we've talked about this before, don't do that.
Don't listen to us, log off now. I think I was obviously disappointed. I thought that this was going to be a little bit more evenly matched, and obviously I've been a massive fan of United, kind of maybe securing the title at some point this year, but it now looks a little bit like there's still a little bit of a way to go, which I think is fair. I mean, when you look at the kind of progress of Man United and where they come from the championship, and now, you know, like you were saying there, sort of, you know, losing 6 to Chelsea last time they played, and now, you know, coming into a situation where it was a very evenly matched for like large portions of the game, and them having their own chances themselves. So I think this is progress. I think this is positive overall to take away from that game. So to be honest, I still think they're in with a chance. You just don't know what's gonna happen, do you?
Listen, technically we got it right. One of us in the studio said that Chelsea were gonna win it, so you know.
Who was that?
Always right for the results. Probably Jesse.
Yeah,
the Chelsea fan.
It wasn't us two. I don't think we got a prediction right all season. So I think we just got to touch on briefly. I mean, Lauren James, another outstanding performance. I think she was such a great attacking threat on the wing, causing all kinds of problems, whipping in balls. I think obviously, Rach, you mentioned before that, you know, is she going to deliver the end product? And I feel like she's showing consistency here. I think she's obviously, you know, found her feet again, coming back from the injury. And I feel like actually she's going to be making the starting 11 a lot and causing some serious damage to teams. I mean, she's such a big threat.
What I thought was really interesting was Man United weren't great at dealing with her. And you would think of all teams to maybe have figured out how to deal with her in some way would be Man United, given she's played there, played with them for quite a while. So that was really interesting because she was still able to dance her way around the defenders. And yeah, she just causes that panic, doesn't she, in defenders, because they just don't really, it reminds me of when Megan Campbell has a throw in, like suddenly defenders are like, whoa, like, what do I do? And which always surprises me. So with her, when she comes at you, it's like, you don't know if she's going to be direct. You don't know if she's going to go left, go right, pass the ball. And she disguises that really, really well. So yeah, it's the panic she instills in players, in defenders.
Yeah, and I just love the character that she's showing. You know, she now looks right at home in that Chelsea side. Her little celebration with Sam Kerr, the basketball, you know.
The badge tap in front of
the badge tap.
The United fans.
She's just showing oodles of character and also enjoyment for playing out there. And, I mean, I just love to see that. And now, as Rachel said, you're getting that end product at the end of it. It's great to see. But I just love that the whole round, all of the roundness to her game is coming to view.
Massively. And I think, it's difficult when you play against a former team. Well, you'd think it would be difficult, but to Lauren James, I don't think it could have been any team at that point. I don't think she gave two hoots about the fact that she was playing against her former squad, which was lovely to see. I think, again, another massive performance as well. I've got a shout out to Wrighton because, I mean, she's just been absolutely killer. I mean, and also, I think, kind of humbly, didn't go down for what I thought was going to be a penalty. I think she kind of, it looked like she'd slipped the way that she'd gone down, but she was actually taken out by Myla Tizzi. I think she was very lucky there not to get the pen. But I think had Wrighton kicked off about it and caused a bit more of a fuss, I think they probably would have had that.
Yeah, I think that was a pen. But I think she, in the moment, she felt like she could get back up and get the ball. And that just says a lot about her, that she was like, whether it's a pen or not, I could get the ball here and I could get the chance. So it was almost like she was just distracted trying to get back up to her feet because it was like a bit of a slip and then she got knocked over and then she slipped again and it was like, you know, eventually ended up in a heap on the floor. But she's unbelievable this season. She has more crosses in her game than a church. Like, honest to God, like, they're crossing constantly. They're so pinpoint as well. I was watching her, I think it was against Vlasny. I think she had something like 4 assists or something ridiculous like that. Like,
it was hard not to get an assist against Vlasny, to be fair.
Fair, but she managed to bag most of them. So, and in games, in the bigger games, she's still putting in performances like that. So another kind of underrated player. There's a lot of underrated players, and I understand that. We talk a lot about your goal scorers and stuff, and you're looking at Chelsea with so many big names, but yeah, she's been excellent.
And the rocket that she fired off in the second half that cracked against the post, I was like, you could tell by that point she just wanted a goal. She was like, I'm sick of assists, actually. It's too much. I'm going to be the main player for once. But yeah, it didn't quite work out, but still, yeah, such a great presence. Man United play Arsenal next after the international break, so another massive test for them. Probably not ideal timing, trying to pick yourself up after, you know, the first defeat of the season. But, I mean, they've had a sort of fairly good-ish, not easy run by any stretch of the imagination, but a nice mid-table run. So this is their chance to kind of prove themselves in amongst the big boys. We'll see how they fare with that.
One of the benefits for them was the run of games they had. And we talked about this in previous episodes, to kind of allow them to build momentum and confidence. And yes, it'll be frustrating that they lost to Chelsea, but I do think there are positives they can take out of it. And I think they can definitely learn from that. And if they can implement those learnings in the Arsenal game, you know, I mean, we'll build it up again, but that could be a cracker as well. It's at the Emirates. I think they said they've sold 30,000 tickets already. Like, you know, that kind of atmosphere. It's just, let's see if they rise to the occasion, and I hope they do, because it could be, yeah, another kind of potential decider, if you like, in terms of where they finish in the table.
I did kind of look at these two games and go, this could be really decisive for their season. You know, it's sandwiched by an international break. If they got the win yesterday or on Sunday, that could have been a real blow if they'd had the international break now to kill their momentum. Maybe with the loss now, you know, maybe it's a good time for them to have the international break. Who knows? But I think these two games are such a key point of the season, right back to back. Well, yeah, with the international break in the middle. But, you know, it's not going to be easy coming back as well. It's, what, 3 days after all of the international players come back. So it's a quick turnaround. So it's going to show all of your skill set if you can try and, you know, make the fight and you take it to Arsenal, who are in flying form.
They are, but Arsenal have got couple of injuries at the moment. So, you know, this could be the perfect time to play them. So, you know, another fireworks game, hopefully.
Well, I mean, Arsenal are pretty much on flying form at the moment. A continuation of their record-breaking streak. 14 league wins in a row. They're feeling pretty Billy Big Balls, and rightly so. I mean, another massive win over Leicester, which I think no one was surprised, were they? No one was surprised with a 4-0 win at Leicester. I think Leicester, who have yet to pick up any points in any of their games since starting the season. You know, I was watching the game and it was barrage after barrage after barrage of Arsenal attack. And Leicester were just struggling to get a foothold in the game. And I think from, you know, the first couple of minutes where Arsenal had two great attempts within, I think it was like 2 or 3 minutes, wasn't it? I think we all just knew that the game was only going to go one way. I mean, you guys watched it. What did you think? What were your thoughts?
I agree. The conditions were bloody horrendous. First of all, it was like raining sideways for so much of the match. Some of the photos coming out of that match looked amazing. It's as we expected, right? And we did maybe wonder, would there be a bit of a new manager bounce now that Lydia Bedford's gone and Willie Kirk has taken over? Not a lot of time for that changeover necessarily either. And what a match for him to come in on. I think we expected it. And Arsenal, as I said, have a number of injuries. Kim Little's now out after the West Ham game. She picked up a knee injury that looks like she could be out for a little while. You know, they're obviously missing Rafa Souza, Leah Williamson. They've given Viv Miedema a break. Looks like Lena Hurtig picked up an injury during that game as well. So the fact that they can go out and play like that and win like that, despite injuries to key players, is a really good sign. For me, I still think Arsenal have another gear. Maybe we've seen it in some of the other games where, for me, I don't feel like they've quite reached their heights. But this will be good for them, good for their confidence, particularly going into the break and knowing what's waiting for them on the other side of that international break.
I think we're just seeing with Arsenal this season that strength and depth that, you know, when these injuries happened, you know, last year, we thought, oh, that's the end of their season. Or they're going to struggle to keep up with Chelsea. Whereas this season, they just keep bringing in new players, and someone like Frieda Marnham, you know, has risen to the occasion. Even the back line, Steph Catley and Lotta Wubemoy, you know, that centre-back pairing, you wouldn't have naturally put them together, I don't think. But they've had a good run of games where they've risen to the occasion as well. Yes, there's been a couple of errors here and there, but they've managed to iron them out and get the win in the end. So I think it shows a massive progression from Arsenal in that sense, that, you know, one big injury, two big injuries doesn't create chaos around their season, and you don't really see a way back for them, which I think is pretty interesting.
Because if we think about this time last season, it was kind of early mid-November when the wheels started to slightly come off for Arsenal after such a great start. Leah Williamson got injured, they drew with Spurs, and they had a couple of losses in the Champions League and in the FA Cup final. And everyone kind of pinpointed that moment. I mean, a lot of people said it was the loss to Birmingham last season. But for me, it was that moment where things started to get shaky. And we didn't maybe think that Arsenal had the depth to pull themselves out of that. Now, I think the fact that they beat Lyon in the Champions League has given them massive confidence when it comes to maybe the trickier games. So I think as well, apart from the strength and depth, their heads are in a different place now. I know I keep banging on about it, but that's where the real test is with Man United, is to see how they manage in that situation versus how maybe they would have managed that situation last season.
No, guys, I've got to agree with you there. I mean, the depth of the squad is incredible. I mean, you know, I was looking at some of the stats. They have 10 different goal scorers in the opening six games, which in itself is unreal. Pretty much anyone from the goalkeeper can probably have a chance at this point. We've got to touch on the fact that, you know, Vivian being away, being given a leave of absence to rest and recharge. I've not really seen too much information about whether there's any kind of deeper things going on here. But in the absence of Viv, I mean, last season you would be looking at, you know, people thinking, oh, this is a definitely a weakened squad. But this year, I mean, Marnham, I mean, how the hell Viv's going to get her shirt back, I do not know, because Marnham is absolutely in for the kill. Every single game that she started now, she's scored, been on the score sheet, and also a lot of chance creation from her. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think this is going to be a permanent fixture? Have you heard anything more about Viv and the sort of rest and recharge period?
I think it's great that she's been given a chance to rest. I think more teams should do that if they can. And I think we'll see more teams doing that if they can, especially teams that are competing in multiple competitions like a Champions League and teams that have such depth. In the next couple of years, we're going to have, you know, more competitions, more major tournaments, a new Nations League, so more football. And we've got back-to-back-to-back tournaments. If Team GB make the Olympics, that's just it's going to be 4 or 5 summers with major tournaments, and these players need a break. So for me, it's brilliant that she's been given a break, and I'd like to see more of that with players if they can. I don't see it as big a deal as maybe others do. I don't think, you know, that Manham means that she doesn't get her shirt back. I think you've got versatility with Miedema. She can play a 9 or a 10. And I think that's another option for Arsenal if they need it, especially if Hurtig's injured. So I'm not too concerned about that. I think it's great. I think there's depth. That's what we want. And it's, you know, looking after player welfare. And Jonas talks a lot about player welfare. So yeah, I'm not too worried about it.
Oh, I think someone like Viv has been in that in the Netherlands side since she was so young as well. She's literally been on this cycle of football forever. So I think and especially in the last few years since COVID, where it's put back-to-back tournaments, you know, she went to the Olympics, she was at the Euros, obviously got hit by COVID there, but like it's still football, football, football. So I think for someone who at times did carry the Arsenal team in previous seasons, you know, playing when she wasn't at her best because she wasn't fit, because she'd pick up a niggle here and there, but they needed her in the squad so much that she had to play. Whereas now they have the luxury of if she has a niggle or if she, you know, I do think COVID probably hit her quite hard in the summer. We haven't seen her at her best since that point. So yeah, I think it's a luxury for Arsenal to have to be able to go to her and say, you know, you can take some time. It's a good. I mean, you're going to a World Cup next year. It's going to be non-stop, so take the time you need for a couple of weeks where you can just to have that break.
And I think it's great that Arsenal have fostered an environment where a player can feel they can ask for that. And Miedema isn't the only Dutch player not to have been called up to this camp. So it's great to see. There's obviously really good communication between national team manager and domestic team manager. That he's given a couple of players a rest, recognises that, you know, I think even we see it in the England squad, I think a couple of players, you know, have picked up niggles. They're probably not that big of an injury. They've come to camp with something, a niggle, and they've looked at it and said, you know what, it's not worth the risk. There's no need for you to necessarily risk yourself. We've got depth. Have a break. And I think, yeah, amen, more of that.
Well, I mean, clearly she wasn't missed. It was a pretty emphatic win over Leicester. But again, you know, we said there it wasn't really that unexpected. I mean, Leicester haven't been... They've not really started, have they? They've not really started their season. Now being managed by Willie Kirk, I think he was bloody brave to take over what was essentially the Titanic of WSL teams. They're now only 3 points off of Reading. So, I mean, the board was saying regrettably concluded that a change in direction is necessary, brought in Willie Kirk. He has got a big job on his hands. Some would say it's utter madness that he would even embark on such a challenge at this point in the season, given their run of games. But, I mean, what do you feel that these guys... What can Leicester do to kind of prevent relegation? Because the way it's going, it does seem like a pretty done deal already. I know it's early. I know that's a really bold statement to make this early in the season. But for me, I think, you know... Willie Kirk was saying, you know, their fitness levels weren't that great. They failed to compete fitness-wise. They did defend fairly well on occasion to try and keep the margin fairly small, just 4-0, because I think it could have been a lot higher and a lot more embarrassing. They did register 3 shots on target, so that's a positive. Let's take that away from the game, shall we? But, I mean, they've picked up 1 point, I think, out of 42 in the WSL game, so... What have this squad got to do? Because apart from praying, I am struggling to see how they're going to save themselves.
I think Leicester need to use the winter window, if they can, to bring in some bodies. Just some options. I think their performances actually haven't been, despite all of the defeats, all that bad. Like, they haven't been truly, like... massively thumped, you know, this season. Their performances are there, but they just haven't got the end product on the end of it. And I do think Jonas was actually really good on Lydia Bedford, and he was like, when I was doing the prep for this game, when I was prepping for her to be in charge, you know, I'd seen improvement in their performance, and I think that credit should go to Lydia. So it was a really nice little shout out from him for Lydia's a really young coach as well. You know, it was her first job in domestic football, having been with the international setup before that, the youth setup. So it was definitely like throwing herself into the fire. I think, actually for me, Willie Kirk, the pressure is kind of off a bit because, you know, he's come into, we all know where they're at. They're bottom of the table. They're struggling for wins. They're struggling for goals. He can just come in and try and steady the ship. And if it works, then he's their saviour. And if it doesn't, well, he doesn't have to take the blame so much, I think. So it actually takes the pressure off a bit.
You said there that he touched on they couldn't compete with fitness. I think focusing on areas that you can fix in a season, you're not going to get your team up to the fitness of Arsenal before the end of the season, right? Like, obviously, you're going to keep working on your fitness, but that's not something you're not suddenly going to be able to match that in a couple of weeks. So for me, it's kind of looking at the areas that you can make difficult for other teams. And Jonas did say that they were a difficult team to prep for because they're difficult to break down. And, you know, that's an area they need to look at. Teams don't score goals, they're not going to beat you. So it's one thing not necessarily scoring on the other end. They do need to create more chances. But I guess it's just building on what they are good at. And maybe not focusing too much on things that are not necessarily going to change in a couple of months.
All right, well, Willie Kirk, you've heard it here first. These are your action points.
We've set you some... love the managers in WSL if they start using us as their reference.
We've set you some objectives, some smart targets. let's see if you can reach them and also increase your budget enough to bring in some superstar international players over the winter break.
Listen, Leicester have budget. It's just about where they spend it.
All right, new players or we will see you in the Championship.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, West Ham, Brighton. I mean, I just didn't even know where to look. It was like it was one of those games that was just so overstimulating. I was just like, where is the next goal going to cut? Is a dog going to run on and score a goal? Is there going to be a streaker? It was just like a carnival game. Brighton picked up the points. It was 5-4, 9 goals of craziness. West Ham took the lead, lasted only 5 minutes. Daniel Carter pounced on a really, really bad error from Sophie Hilliard. That's a goalkeeper's nightmare. She had a bit of time. She had a bit of time to play that pass, overthought it, thought she was going to be smart, try and take it out the other side, got completely killed. And I think it did rattle her for the next big portion of the game. So it does happen. Keepers, you know, we've all been there. It's carnage. It's not great. But
she'll be quicker next time.
She'll have to be. I mean, that's the only way is to get quicker. So if you were there, what did you think? Like, see, being there pitch side, I mean, your mouth just must have been open the entire time. Like, what is going to happen next?
Yeah, I think it was a massive surprise, because I think when West Ham went up in 2 minutes, I was like, oh, well, oops, Brighton, this is going to be tough. Because, you know, once West Ham get into gear, especially in that first half, they can run away with games. And they've scored that early so often, and we've seen them just run on to win the game. But yeah, they managed to claw themselves back. It was absolute chaos. It was the WSL at its chaotic best, I think. I was doing post-match and I'd written out my questions on 80 minutes. And then West Ham scored one and then they scored another. And I was like, I'm going to have to rewrite all of these. Yeah, absolute carnage. The weather beforehand was, you know, apocalyptic. It was literally raining sideways across the pitch as they were doing the warm-up. And then the sky's cleared. And then the football just took over the madness from the weather. So, yeah, I don't really know. It was just, I think West Ham got complacent when they took the lead. They took their eye off the ball.
Literally,
eye off the ball. But I also think what Amy Merrick's did, she brought in Danielle Carter and she dropped Lee back into the midfield. Lee was having great fun out there. She was showing all of her tricks and flicks. And it's not maybe a position that we necessarily have seen her in many times, but she added a bit more defensive cover, whereas Danielle Carter then added the directness to the attack, and she was just on the counter every time. She was just that experience that she has and the pace that she has going forward. She was making such a big impact, and she got her 2 goals as well, got an assist I think as well. So I think that was a massive call from Amy Merrick's for her first game in charge.
Neither team seemed to want to defend, first of all, which just, you know, it was like both teams were like, fuck it, we'll throw caution to the wind. If we score more goals, we'll win. That's the new manager bounce we were expecting from Leicester, maybe. Brighton showed us the new manager bounce. I was at Reading Man City and I was just getting these texts through being like, oh, we've had a goal already. And then I was like, 3-1 now. I was like, oh my God, and it's 5-2. I was like, what the fuck? And then like my game ended and I get a 5-4. And I was like, what? I've clearly gone to the wrong game. This is insane. Someone actually tweeted saying, I want to know what insider knowledge Girls on the Ball had to know to cover this match of all the matches this weekend.
It was a question, like, my other question is around Sophie Hilliard. There wasn't a spare goalkeeper on the bench, and she did get knocked for six, I think, just before Brighton's fourth goal, I think, and then the subsequent corner when, you know, got scored. And I think if they had had a keeper on the bench, that she would have come off, because she was down for a good few minutes, and it looked like a head knock. And I just question whether she should have been on the pitch. I don't know, but her confidence was by that point anyway quite shot, I think.
Who do you think would have stepped in as the goalkeeper? Ooh, had she come
Dagny
off, do you reckon?
Go for height.
No, Longhurst. Dagny's gonna score your goals.
It was that kind of game, though. I mean, at that point, you could have expected anyone could have gone on. Like, Daniel Carter could have changed sides and gone on in goal. It just was a kind of like a rush goalie type situation. But yeah, I mean, the last 5 minutes were pure madness. I mean, Asseyi smashing home 2 goals within 2 minutes. I thought, oh my God, this is the West Ham are going to salvage a point out of this. This is going to be absolutely mental.
And I think they had the chance.
100%. It was
Cody
like,
oh my God,
inches close.
Open goal, basically.
It was, yeah. I mean, she's going to be thinking about that for a fair few weeks. I mean, yeah, it was just beautiful to watch. You just didn't know what was going to happen. And I think that was just the beauty of that game. And we do have them in the WSL every now and again, those kind of magical, weird, crazy unicorn games. But important for Brighton, picking up the win, who now move 6 points clear of the relegation zone. So a bit of a breather for them. I mean, a win for West Ham could have propelled them into fifth, given the sort of standings in the table and how close things are at the moment. So, yeah, it was a big game for both, but Brighton walking away the ultimate winners.
Also, shout out for Dagny Brynjar's daughter. I think she's having a brilliant season. I think it took her a couple of seasons to find her feet and to really impact games, and bloody hell, she's doing that now. She seems to score nearly every game for West Ham, and she's captain as well. So I think, yeah, she's having a great season, which is good to see. I know they didn't win, but she did score at the weekend, didn't she? So again,
it was given to Victoria Williams in the end, an own goal. But she did cause it. She ran into the area. So.
Yeah.
I'm giving it to Dagny.
Yeah, 100%. We'll chalk that up as a Dagny. I mean, another crazy set of complicated things coming up. I mean, it feels quite right, actually, to go from the West Ham-Brighton game of carnage into the complicated international tournaments. The UEFA Nations League is coming to women's football. And if you thought the European qualifications was difficult, then You're in for a treat. You're in for a real treat here. And we've got an expert in Soph who's going to explain everything, every tiny little bit of detail about the league. We just thought we'd throw you in the deep end, being the guest and also wife of our host. So just to kind of give you a little bit of context, it starts in autumn 2023. Teams will be ranked and placed into leagues based on their UEFA coefficient before playing a mini league over international breaks. The league winners will go on to knockout stages through to an eventual final, but they will also inform the seeding for the next European Championships. So, I mean, Soph, if you want to help on picking all of that apart, then you can, not to completely throw to the wolves here. But yeah, do you think it's a good idea, first off? Do you think it's a good implementation of UEFA? They want to increase the investment. They felt that this was a way to do that, a way to sort of get more eyes on the game. What are your thoughts on it?
I think for me, the jury's still out. I do still worry about the amount of games that are being played. And I was always concerned when I first heard about this concept being the idea of being put into the women's game was, where are you going to put it? But actually for me, yes, they're going to play more football, but I like the way that they've, you know, split it up so that you have sort of your Nations League as your maybe pre-qualifying, qualifying to set the qualifying for the major tournament.
Say that again.
Rather than run. This is what I said. She was explaining it to me and I was like, nope, sorry.
Go again.
So essentially the Nations League will happen in the autumn, as you said. It's three leagues. League A and B have four groups of four. League C has four groups of four and one group of three. So in each group, you play each other once home and away. So you've got six matches. In League A, the winners of League A will then go on to the semifinals, and then you'll have a third place playoff or a final. So you can go to that stage and try and win it. And then you move into the next phase, which is qualifying. And basically, it's the same concept. You have the three leagues of the same amount of groups, you have the positions, and then in League A the top two winners go directly into the Euros in 2025 plus the hosts, and then it gets complicated this is the really interesting bit, because then you go into the playoffs for the remaining places for the Euro 2025. And in League C, you still have a chance to get through those playoffs. So the bottom two of League A in each group will play the top two in League C in each group for a position. And that has the chance to go to the second round of playoffs, where you then play League B.
We'll get her in next year or whenever this is happening to explain it again.
So actually, League C have a chance to get through the playoffs. So that doesn't nullify their opportunities. So it gives them an opportunity. But it's actually a real, like, innovative concept of qualifying, which I'm quite intrigued by.
So basically, you have a Nations League, which happens in the autumn internationals, and will determine your qualifying groups effectively for the Euros. So they're not really called Euro qualifiers in the following year when you do your international breaks. They're still under the Nations League name, but they are effectively qualifiers for the Euros.
Right. You lost me at UEFA. So if anyone is still listening and is still following this, and also can I just give a massive shout out to Soph, who just explained all of that without referring to a single written note or website page. That was just off the top of her head, which is like incredible. I mean, for you guys, I mean, because I didn't even know this was being considered by UEFA. I mean, do you think this is going to be a sort of a benefit to kind of some of the smaller teams? They get regular competitive games. They're not going to be thrashed in the kind of big 20-0ers that we sometimes see. It causes a bit of embarrassment. They're not the games that we really feel that the women's get, that promote the women's game in the right way. What do you see as sort of the big benefits of this?
So I'd agree with the concern over the number of games. I do think that's something that's maybe slightly concerning, given we've got so many major tournaments back to back. I want to see it in action, because I've not always been hugely against the big scorelines. I think sometimes the games need it. I think sometimes these federations need to be shown the gaps between them and federations who are properly investing in their teams. I've never come away from one of those matches, post-matches, where the opposition manager has not said that they've learned. They've always learned. They've always said these are the games we learn so much from. And look, it's obviously never nice to lose by a big scoreline, but you learn loads. You show your FA where the gaps are. You know, oftentimes when we go and see these teams play away, they put them in the big stadiums because England are coming to town, and otherwise they'll be on a training pitch somewhere. So for me, I want to see it in action. I want to see if the teams lower down the rankings benefit, because my worry is that they're just going to play other teams of a similar ranking, and I worry that they're not necessarily then going to grow or see the areas of learning that they need, or be able to evidence to their federation that they need more investment if they're just beating fellow ranked 30 teams or whatever it might be. So I'd like to see it in action. I'd like to see what matchups end up happening. You know, if they're still in Group C and they manage to play, you know, someone in Group A twice, great. That's kind of what you get from qualification. But yeah, I've always found, and I'll probably get told off for this, I've always found that attitude a little bit elitist, where, oh, we're beating these minnow teams, these games shouldn't happen, they should have to play extra qualifiers or whatever. For me, I think there are until those teams tell us we don't want to play these games anymore, then maybe we should pipe down a bit. So I'll reserve my judgment until I see.
Ooh, that sounds like a sitting on the fence type of answer, that, Rach. We love those.
I would agree with you.
Of course you would. That's not biased at all, so go on.
No, I mean,
we actually had a debate over this the other day.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, because I do actually like the fact that the top two in League C groups will play the bottom two in League A groups for the playoffs. I think that gives them a real opportunity to, you know, play against a higher level opposition, because it is done on coefficient, roughly by that point. So I think that gives them the good experience. I think the fact that you can be promoted and relegated also gives them a chance. But I am also of the view that, you know, we sat down with the head of the women's football at the North Macedonian FA, and she was like, these games are where I can go to my boss and should say, you know, this is what England are doing. Kind of, we need to up our game here. And, you know, they got a new women's football strategy this year in North Macedonia, because, you know, they're striving for better and striving to progress the game over there. Yes, they're, you know, years behind what England are doing, but they've been able to see that in the flesh and see, as Rachel said, where the gaps are. It's so important that we don't just sort of try and siphon people off or countries off just because they're smaller or they don't put the same amount of investment in. You know, some of them are trying really, really hard, and they have to be shown and get that experience against the top level teams and make the headlines for that reason.
Well, I think watch this space, basically. We don't know how it's all going to unfold until it actually unfolds.
In like 2025 or something.
In 2025.
It's a while away.
I mean, on the basis that we continue this podcast for the next 3 years, we will be able to
wink,
tell
wink,
you.
Hint, hint.
Yeah, we will let you know. Stay tuned for 3 years.
And hopefully we'll have figured it all out by then. By the time we get to the end of it, or 2024 or whatever, we'll have no problem understanding it.
I've got it down, thank you very much.
You do, yeah. But the rest of us have to catch up.
So if you're the only person in the UK who fully understands this system, so
the expert now.
Stay with us. I mean, talking of international fixtures, we've obviously got England versus Japan this Friday night in Spain. United, Maya Letizia, our little sort of rising star, and Brighton's Katie Robinson have received their first call-up. So congratulations to them. Jess Park is also included as a replacement for the ill Fran Kirby. She was an unused sub in the last round of games. Also, Jordan Nobbs and Lauren Hemp withdrawn due to injury. So a bit of a different England squad coming up for this set of international fixtures, but a great chance for some players now to step in and sort of make a name for themselves on the international stage. Everton's Gabby George has also been called up as well. Serena Riegman, impressed with the under-23s form. She said, we have about 8 months to prepare for the World Cup and we want to see where these young players are at now. So, yeah, it's an exciting time for these little youngsters, these little minnows, these little lionessy minnows, little lioness cubs. Yeah.
Yeah, so exciting. I think it's so good that we have this opportunity to give them the chances now. They might not make it to Australia. Like, in all honesty, we've got quite a good squad, really strong. When they're all fit and firing, the Lionesses squad, you won't see that many positions up for grabs. I don't think if they're all on the same level as what they were during the summer. But, you know, with all of these back-to-back tournaments, it comes around so quick and they're getting a look in now. If they really catch the eye, then they have every chance of going to Australia. But then if they don't, they've been in the environment where certainly next September, other older ones will probably drop out a bit. And we need to start that regeneration and starting it as early as possible in these windows where you've got competitive games because, you know, Japan, Norway, they're good opposition, but they don't matter in the bigger sense of the word. It's the best opportunity for them to get that experience of what it's like to be at camp, to be away with England, senior team, what Suriname expects from you when you're training, all of that stuff, so that when you come to September next year, you have that chance to make, you know, we've got another tournament, hopefully in the next summer. You know, it's just back-to-back football. So you need to stake your claim and you need those opportunities. And it's really good for them.
You also have to factor in, like, God forbid, there's an injury, you know, and you don't want to be calling someone up who's not really, doesn't really know how the system works or what training's like or what Wiegmann's like, and you're calling them up like a month or two before a World Cup. Like, you want them to at least be able to find their footing fairly quickly. And it's not a lot of time between major tournaments, and you might not often see youngsters being called up with only 8 months to a major tournament, but we don't have that luxury now. We don't have like a year of qualifying. And I think it's great that Wiegmann's not afraid to use these windows to try out new young players. As you say, like, we don't have the time otherwise to bed them in. So yeah, it's exciting times. And I think England aren't the only ones doing it. I mean, obviously Spain don't have a choice, Jorge Vilda. But there are other national teams doing it as well. We touched on the Netherlands, and it's, you know, it's really interesting to see how managers are managing these back-to-back tournaments and how they're figuring out bringing in new players in such short spaces of time. So yeah, it just makes it all the more exciting.
Well, let's wait and see then how the England Lioness Cubs, or if they find their roar in the next couple of games. Did you like that? That was cute.
So cute.
That's quite sweet, wasn't it? All right, I mean, carrying on with the international theme of this this back end of the pod. Guys, where are you off to? Where are you going? Heard you got a big old holiday lined up and weirdly didn't get the invite. I don't know where that is. Yeah, I've got my passport though, so just let me know.
Have you got your Esther? Because we are flying to LA this afternoon. Our very first little nephew, was born last week. So we're flying over to see him and to see Sophie's sister. But we're not missing the whole international window because obviously Sophie couldn't accept that. So we are only over
domestic
there for
incoming
5 days. And then we land in Heathrow and then we just stay in Heathrow because we're flying to Madrid to catch England-Norway. So we will miss England-Japan. But we won't miss England-Norway because we're doing a bonkers return trip.
You can see who she blames for this one.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that it's not an actual holiday. You will still be working thoroughly throughout the entire time and have absolutely no time to yourself or your family. That's always good and heartwarming to hear. It's the international break. So I've got a weekend off. So I might actually catch up with, you know, living my life at some point.
Sleeping,
eating, the basics. Just started CrossFit as well. So,
oh, Christ.
That's escalated. Didn't think that would.
Next time I see you in the studio, you're going to be like this massive hench.
That's
like
the plan, to come in absolutely ripped. I'm yet to see
the
results. But it is early days, so let's wait and see what the January 2023 body transfer window brings for myself. Yeah.
Body transfer, that makes it sound like your whole body's just like, I'll have that one. I don't want this one anymore. I'll just have
a
fully complete
pun.
CrossFit body.
Right, well, I think on that weird little note, it's definitely time for us to wrap up. Thanks for listening to Upfront. If you've got any questions for us, hit us up on Twitter. I am at Morgie_89 or Rach and Soph are at Girls on the Ball. We will see you next week.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.